G'day guys, and welcome once again to the Scouting Australia podcast,
powered by Australian Property Scout. I am your host, Sammy Gordon, and I have with me Jimmy. How are you, mate?
Hey, Sammy, good to see you.
You too, mate. I haven't seen you for a little bit.
I know.
How you been?
You missed me?
Yeah, man. Yeah,
I missed you.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
I'm liking the white.
Thanks, man.
It's very fresh.
I know. You normally, it's always APS polo for me, but mate, my six are in the wash, and I don't have one for the Sunday sesh that we're punching out, mate. So, yeah, mate. Apologies.
Good to see you. Apologies. How you been?
I've been really well, man.
Yeah?
Really well. Apparently, we've been getting smashed with a bit of inquiry on the last few that we did, with a bit of feedback. A bit of positive feedback, which is always great.
Yes.
How about you, man? How you been?
Very good. Things are good in Melbourne, you know? Melbourne lifestyle.
Got any sun down there?
Nah, it's raining. Sun? Something different. Cold, wet, and windy.
Different how?
Yeah. Bit of the same. So. Okay. Good to be back up here in the sunny Goldie, sunny, as they say. Do you consider yourself a Queenslander now? Because you were born and bred blue.
Yes.
Have you changed?
New South Welshman. No, I haven't changed.
You know?
No.
Origin, haven't switched yet?
No.
Oh, you just see that pause? That if people are watching, jeez.
Mate, I'm very close to the border, so I'm a bit of a step over one or the other sort of way. So,
Bloody hell. I thought once you're born blue, you don't go, can't. Isn't that what the origin is?
Mate, if I'm being dead honest with you, mate, I'm not the big, like I don't follow the NRL that much.
No, you're pink.
Yeah, I'm pink, mate. I'm pink. That's it. I like netball and frisbee. It's a good.
Actually, that's true. Rugby league has never been your strong sport as a semi-professional.
Oh, soccer. Here we go. Righto, mate. How old are you?
Sorry. People have actually written in and said, can you please always mention semi-pro? I just have to put it, it's like a little disclaimer in every.
I've had over 100 people write in guessing your age is over 100. Mate, it's crazy.
Well, they're getting close.
Yeah, mate.
They are getting close.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of people writing in.
Yes.
Our producer, Tommy.
Hang on. Are we at worm level yet?
Well, I don't think we're just there just yet. No,
not quite the one.
No.
Come on, guys.
But Tommy did mention to me earlier on that the podcast we did with the one to two, we were supposed to do six properties in the one session.
Yes,
but
we got a bit sidetracked with a couple
we
of things
did,
there.
We did. But it was awesome. When listening back after Tommy sent me the message, I was listening to it over and there were so many different things that we discussed there. So we thought today, let's really dive back into that due to popular demand and let's finish off that 3 to 6.
Wow.
Hopefully we can squeze another one in.
What's another one?
No, the 3 to 6 because we only did two.
Okay.
So, yeah, cool. Yeah?
Let's do it. Yeah, man. 3 to 6, that's four, mate.
But that's actually four, yes.
Yeah, that's doubling down.
Thank you, yes.
I can see. You know how we did that last one about numbers, knowing your numbers really well? I can see why you use a buyer's agent.
Yes,
mate.
That is probably not my strong suit. But anyway, we are going to do a deep dive into 3 to 6. So for those of you that didn't listen to the first the podcast, we spoke about your first two properties, just to give us a quick recap, high level.
Yep.
First one, Wollongong, unit, paid, what was it again?
275.
Yep. And
275. At this point, I'd done a little cosmetic reno to it.
Yep.
She was renting at 400 a week and she was valued at around about 350.
350.
Yeah. And the market was just starting to take off.
In Sydney. Then we changed tax. We went for a completely different approach. Southern Highlands. We found a bit of dirt, negotiated really well, listed for 200. We got in for 130.
133.
Built for just over two.
204 and a half.
204 and a half. You did all the work. You did fences. Retaining walls. Pretty impressive.
All good stuff.
And you're in a position of having around, what, about 100 grand of equity?
In that one? Yeah. At this point, actually, mate, we're probably about a year on, so I might have been up to around about 500 val at that point.
Yeah, good.
It's a nice little bit of growth ticking through.
And we said 355 cost base.
Yeah, 355, cost base. That's it.
Okay. All so in. The stage is set, right? Is now, one thing when I was listening to that podcast, what I didn't ask you, was to get into that deal with the land and the purchase. Did you pull any equity at all out of the first deal?
Yes, I still remember how much it was.
How much?
Have a guess.
30.
13. Yeah, it was weird, man. I kept struggling to get it valued up. It was a big issue that I found with units was that 2x1 unit, they keep pulling the lowest vals and lowest comps they can find in the market. Because the market was quite deflated at the time, even though I bought well and it was doing well, and it was worth more than the comps they were valuing it at, it was post GFC and not all that long past GFC, global financial crisis, for those of you who don't know, 2007, 2008, global markets crashed. Valuers had been shot that overvalued things before the before the boom and before the bust. And so they're being very, very conservative. So I was really struggling to pull capital out of that deal. The 13 though gave me enough for my 10% deposit on the land. And I had to save up the rest for the you know, for the 10% deposit on the build.
Great. And then you had a construction loan, obviously, for the build.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Great. So the stage is set. We've got two deals. Where to next?
Yeah. So look, obviously went back through the refi process, a little bit of a leveling up. I'd gone with the One Direct, which was that subsidiary of ANZ back when I had bought Wollongong. I had actually done the next one with the buy and build with ANZ as well, but it was time to level up. I was moving out of serviceability range with the bank, and I was needing to move into some different territory. And obviously, through all my reading and whatnot as well, had realized it was also time then to move on to a broker as well. So it was a good little bit of a scenario change for me in that point as well. I was working with someone pretty decent at the time for like a lower level investor, mate. They were very handy. I think it was two brothers. They had about five or six properties each, something like that. So they're doing okay. And pretty much what they did for me was they did a nice big equity release on both properties at the time when it came back time to go back to Wollongong. There was more to pull out at that point. And then the Highlands property had a lot to reval out of that one as well. So and then we did this approval in principle called an AIP, and I had a certain amount I could go play with.
Right.
But the big thing that I realized as we started moving to this, which I know we kind of alluded to in that last ep as well, was I knew I was starting to run out of serviceability. So I needed to target these high yielding assets that were going to keep me in the game. Obviously, I'd had some nice property growth, price growth. I wasn't sure if that was going to keep going, but I knew I had to try and make a margin on the way in. I was learning all these strategies. I was kind of reading my things and learning all the rest of it, and obviously what I'd done on the Highland deal. But I knew I had to make money on the way into a deal, and I had to have enough of a yield and enough cash flow to allow me that serviceability to keep growing, keep building from there as well.
Okay. So when we're looking for cash flow, where were we at from an LVR perspective? First property was at 90% from memory. Second deal was at
90%.
And then when you refinanced them, what did you take them up to?
I pulled them both up to 90% of what I'd done. Again? Yep.
So can you just explain, some people just very quickly,
yep.
What does that actually mean? Because some people don't understand how do you when you refinance, what does that mean and how do you extract the equity out of that?
Yeah. So look, when you do your, let's say for easy numbers on the Highlands build, right? You do something like that, and let's just say for easy numbers that it'd cost 400 grand, which it obviously did, but let's say it cost 400 grand.
Just to keep numbers completely nice full and
clean,
easy. Yes.
Just to have them clean, yes. Right? Your 10% deposit is essentially, you need to put in 10% of that amount and then you're borrowing the rest from the bank. So you would have to have put in 40 grand into that deal and the bank put up the rest as capital.
Mm-hmm. So at 360, yep.
Yeah, 360 on that, right?
Yep.
But obviously I borrowed a lot less.
Yeah.
All in, I was in the deal at 355. So yep. I think I'd borrowed around about maybe 300 grand or something on that deal to put it together. Got it revalued at the 500 and was essentially, the 90% of the 500 is 450 grand. So I could pull that loan the whole way up, release that as a chunk of equity, and essentially that gets cashed out.
So the difference between 450 and was it
300-ish, something around that. That difference, that 150, you can extract that as equity.
Yep.
It gets put into the way we had it back then. It got put into an offset account, and that's literally play money for deposits and closings.
But in terms of to service that extra 150, the existing assets carry that extra debt.
They do, correct? But like that's where obviously I was living in the build, but the Wollongong one that had a bit of increase with that. But in terms of actual rental, the rental had increased on that. But I was living in the Highlands house in the build, right?
Got it.
So. Yeah, man, I had to kind of work out a game plan from there. And the realistic fact there was the shortfall or the increased cost of the holding cost of those and those loans, I was going to have to cover that by the new properties coming in.
Yeah. And that's just for people to understand that, yes, you can take the 150, but someone's paying
for it. You got to pay for it. Yeah, yeah.
Somewhere. Some property's paying for it somewhere.
You know what's funny? When I did the first equity release from Wollongong for the land, I remember when I released the equity, I was like, so they just give it to you. Like I just didn't click. You just
thought they give you 13 grand. Thanks.
Oh, they just give it to you. And then, yeah, the more you kind of did it, obviously you do it once and you realize there's a second loan there now that's attached to it and you're paying separately for that as well.
Yeah. Okay. So we extracted the equity. We had how much to play with?
It was circa, I think it was around about 150. Okay. I actually don't think I pulled anything out of Wollongong at that point. I think I just stripped the entire capital that I could out of the build.
Yep.
And I just kind of left it untouched.
Nice.
And that was the one I put to work.
And so we purchased property two in 2012. So where was property three?
Yeah. So bought the land late 2012, finished the build late 2013, mm-hmm. had kind of, you know, did all my landscaping, moved into it in 2014. It took me about a year to save the funds and actually finish the landscaping on the build.
Yep.
So one of the big things on that was it took me a long time to get that cash back together. And because it was an incomplete, essentially the bank saw it as an incomplete build because it hadn't been finished off. And my neighbors around me were, you know, getting their DAs and everything in order for their builds and whatnot after those blocks had sold, but no one was in there yet. So I kind of had to go out there and do it all myself. And on one side was a council easement. So I had to build that side myself anyway. But man, I had to save up the money and save up enough for this fence. So I'd go and buy all the stuff for this fence and then go put it in. And then, you know, 2-3 months later, I get my next paycheck, which you keep reminding me wasn't at a professional level from soccer, but it was enough to pay for a little bit of fence here and there.
Ooh, sore spot.
But it kind of took me another year to kind of finish it off. So by the end of 2014, start of 2015, that's when I was able to actually get that thing revalued and actually pull it out of again.
So where did we go next?
Mate, next we went into Adelaide.
Wow. But first Adelaide, property interstate.
Yep.
Looking for cash flow. We needed cash flow, right? Serviceability was poor.
So there was two locations I was really tossing up at the time. And I remember I look back, man, I kicked myself at it. I was tossing up Hobart. I was tossing up Adelaide. And in Hobart, there was a couple of areas like within like 10Ks of the CBD. And I could have got like, you know, 9-10% yields, like absolute screamers. And I knew I was making good money on the way into the deal. But the chatter everywhere was that the Hobart was just decreasing further and further. I'm like, it hasn't grown for 15 years. How's it going to grow? It's never going to grow, all this sort of stuff. And it put me off. And if I look at the values now, and this is 2015 compared to now, the properties in Adelaide have more than doubled, right? So I've done very well out of them. But the ones that I would have bought in Hobart have more than tripled. So it's a funny thing, mate, and I know this is a topic we're going to cover further off, but like following the herd, mate, it's a huge one. And if I hadn't taken that, I've still done well, but I would have been in a better position than I am now.
Now, before we get into the numbers of property three, what research did you do to identify that those two markets were the ones to go into?
So the big thing for me, I also assessed Brizzy, but I couldn't get a strong enough yield in Brizzy for what I wanted. So everywhere I was looking in Brizzy, I couldn't quite crack a 7% yield.
So you knew you needed 7%?
Yeah, minimum. That was what I needed to get those loans for those purchases. That's what they told me I needed.
Oh, so the bank guided you and said, you need to find something.
The broker I was working with. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so he told me pretty much I had to work with that. I couldn't find it in an area that I was comfortable enough with in Brizzy. There was a few areas I could find them, but they were shitty units and I dealt with that before where on paper it looks bigger than it actually is when you take out the strata, the body corp. So they were my two cities, man. Like I didn't want to go regional. I wanted to stay in capital cities. They were my two cities that met the brief. I flew down and I looked at Adelaide and Adelaide's a nice city, man.
Beautiful.
Clean city. It's one that like 5 years ago or back when I was buying there, a lot of people were negative on and stuff, but it's a beautiful city. And
City of churches, all the listeners from SA out there.
I know. You got a nice city.
There's heaps of clients from Adelaide.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%, man.
I love Adelaide. Good beaches.
It's a good spot. And I never flew to Hobart. I was just tossing up the numbers, but I got talked out of it by all the negative chatter.
Interesting, isn't it?
It is, man.
Was a lot of the research that you were doing, was chatting to people or through the same magazines and all reading through all the articles?
Yeah. I was doing a lot of the magazines were the big one for probably the deterrent of people pushing me away from certain areas. No one was talking up Adelaide either. I didn't mind people not talking it up. Oh, yeah, it's a sleepy slumber city. It'll do its, you know, little bit here and there as it goes. I was confident it was going to do okay, but it was more that I was talking down on Hobart and I just couldn't pull the trigger against the vein.
So that was the clinch out to go into Adelaide.
Yep.
And we're specifically looking for a 7% yield.
Yeah, yeah.
And flew over there.
Yep.
In terms of Adelaide's obviously a big city. Yep. I mean,
it's very stretched. Yeah, yeah.
So where did you just sort of thought, So where'd you start?
I looked in two areas. So two areas I really looked into was I looked down south in the Onkaparinga, which had a little bit of chatter about it. There was a few things going on. It had it was actually the weirdest freeway you've ever seen. It was a single way freeway at one time during the day that took people into the city, and then the afternoon it turned around and came back.
Don't get your days mixed up. All the time of day.
Bloody the old South Australians. I don't know what was going on. That was a cooked government with whatever the hell planned that, right? That was nuts. But they planned this dual carriageway upgrade. So they did it both ways, okay, right? And that was heading down to the Onkaparinga. So it was an upgrade for the region and the area. I could only kind of just afford what I was looking to buy. I had enough to just afford to buy into that market at the time. But when I spent time down there on the ground, even though I was closer to the coast, I wasn't the biggest fan of it. There was just something about it that just, in the areas that I could afford to buy, it just kind of, there's something about it that rubbed me the wrong way. And I was, again, really, I was having a really push to get my 7% yields. So I went north. And the north had more of a stigma about it, but it was funny. The more time I spent in the north, the more I liked it compared to the south. And it was a bit weird. And I knew, went through negotiating and kind of where I was ending up with prices on different things. I was just, same thing as what I did with the others. I was negotiating on, you know, 10, 15 deals at a time to try and get the best deal that I could. And I knew that I could get the yields that I was really chasing in that market.
So we're still looking around 2015?
2015, 2015. Yeah.
And so what did you settle on?
So in the end, the first deal that I found it was actually a funny little property, it was a little fireboro shack. It was on about 700 square meters. Ugly as anything, like ugly as a half full. It was me and this thing, but it's funny as it's like one of the properties in my portfolio that I've never had an issue with. It's like a 1950s build, old fibro thing. I've had two tenants in 7 years, never had an issue, never had a complaint, like just completely fine. Yeah, man, just kind of like a little dream run of a property.
And so what price did we buy that
So for? I paid 155 for that. Mm. So it hit the market at, I'm pretty sure it was offers over 185. Built an instant connection with the young agent that was out there on that one. And we pretty much, he was from Glen Elg, which was like the ritzy part of Adelaide.
It's the Bondi of Adelaide.
Yeah, that's it, man. It's the Bondi of Adelaide. And we was out there, we were chatting and having a good chat and everything and just kind of built a good little relationship. He literally listed it while I was down there scouting on my, it was either my first one, it might have been the second trip, I can't quite recall. And I met him out there at the property and I pretty much left it, you know, scrutinized it and crunched it for maybe half an hour, and then I called him. He wasn't even back at the office yet. And I said, mate, I'll smack you into this. And he was telling me kind of around about 160 was going to close the deal, and it was offers over 185. So it was I kind of got his confidence on it, saying like that's what the seller, 160, 165, something like that. I dropped a 150 offer on it, which he was a bit pissed about. He's like, come on, mate, I told you we were going to close it. And I said, man, I've got to go a bit lower. I need the bigger yield. You know, I was kind of, you know, pumping him up a bit on it. And after a fair bit of like backwards and forwards and whatnot, we ended up on the 155.
Right. Mm-hmm. And achieved the yield.
So it was rent. I did rent it. It was, so the cool thing about this property was it had been freshly painted, freshly carpeted. The dude just got it ready for sale and just took it straight to market, but he needed to cash out like straight away for another deal that he had going on. So yeah, man, he pretty much just took that first offer that came in, even though it was a low ball. I think that was on like a Thursday. By the time it was Saturday rolled around, the agent told me he was just getting absolutely hammered with offers as well.
Wow. So it was already under market when you did buy it.
Yeah.
If you listed it, you would have got every day of the week over 180.
I think it was at least a 180 house. Like I think it was a decent buy at the 180. There wasn't too much selling kind of under 200 at the time. Even that would have been pricing it pretty sharp and getting it going quick.
So asking the question, you never know the answer, right?
Yeah.
And also you fishing out the agent to find out what the appetite of
it was also the speed. The speed was the big one. So like I literally called him as he was, he literally listed it and he was out there for something else. He goes, yeah, no worries, it's vacant. Let's go have a look at it now. Went and looked at it, straight onto it. I knew what market value on that property was. This is, again, something we'll cover in the future, but like knowing your market intimately, knew the price of it, knew it was a steal of that money, and just I'll work to get it wrapped up. Literally, we got it wrapped up that day. Contract was signed, like bang.
Great. 90% loan on that as well?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing looking back, I wish I'd been advised and kind of looked after on it, was you can push for 88% LVRs. 88% keeps you under an 89.5% overall LVR, and it literally halves your LMI from the 88 to the 90. I was a bit pissed, like looking back, I'm a bit pissed because I had such little money that the broker didn't like advise me of it at the time, that it was such a significant saving to do it.
Can you just repeat that again? Because I think you went that really quickly. So a lot of people won't understand that. Okay. So getting LMI, lender's mortgage insurance, for anything above 80%, you're going to be paying insurance on the loan, correct?
Yes, there's a mortgage insurer that will insure the bank. Not you, it will insure the bank.
For that extra portion, right?
Yes.
So you're saying from 80, you took them out at 90%.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you went up to 88%, the difference between what you would have paid and what you did pay. Yeah,
it's about half. It's literally, it absolutely destroys it because it keeps you under this threshold. And once you stay under the threshold, that it's because it's a risk. It's always a risk. It goes up in like 2% increments. And when you keep under that threshold there, that you know, tipping into the higher risk rating, that's when you get absolutely smashed. So yeah, man, it was a lesson learned and something that it's awesome that I can pass it on to our clients now.
That's a massive tip though.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it's a big saving to, you know, across the board, multiple properties, it's a big saving.
And circling back to when we spoke about the circle of influence and the people in your team and your broker, if your broker's not going to present you something with that or at least educate you on that, you got to be asking some questions. Do I have the right broker?
Yeah.
Because I can save you 100%. A ton of money.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to make a huge difference either to your loan.
No, not at all. Not at all, mate.
Okay.
So yeah, we did that one. Mate, I rented it out almost straight away. It was rented the day after settlement. So we were able to lease it during the settlement period. Once it went unconditional, we put it up for rent, had a tenant there ready to move in the day after it settled. So, and she was in there for years, mate. She was in there for like 3 or 4 years. So had a really good run with her.
So at that price point, we haven't used a lot of money to get into the deal.
No.
So we've still got some play money to go.
Yeah.
Heaps. So how quickly did we go from that to the next?
Well, the one beautiful thing as well was on that deal, like I needed 7% to be able to keep going easily. And that one was a little over an 8% yield. It was about 8.1, 8.2% yield. So it actually was increasing my serviceability doing deals like that at the time. These days, to me, a cash flow deal isn't a deal like this, but this is like a bread and butter deal. So good, solid growth property. Mm. You buy it below market and it's got a good yield attached to it. Mate, they're beautiful for kicking the portfolio. So it's still the right deal to kick.
So just to explain to people why you don't think that's a real cash flow deal now. Is it because there's other cash flow deals that are more supercharged?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So you can go like lower purchase price, high yielding. But at the end of the day, if it's a single income asset, you've still got one set of rates, one set of insurances, one set of water, you know, all that sort of stuff, which is like a net cost. It's like almost unavoidable. If you go down something that's like a manufactured cash flow deal, like let's say we go, I know you've done a couple, we've done them with you, is that, you know, something like a secondary dwelling or a granny flat or multi rentals from the one property, a lot of the time you might pay a little bit extra, but it might be like a third or sometimes barely any extra at all extra. But you're getting that second rental income stream coming in. Mm. You're not buying additional land. You literally just pay that little bit extra for the rates or whatnot. And you've got that second income stream coming in on the same property. So dual incomes on the same title, and it's almost unbeatable.
Mm. Essentially, you're squeezing the most amount of value and cash flow out of the property.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So that's a very successful strategy of mine that we've been able to implement. But that's a proper like G'd up cash flow deal.
Yeah.
I mean, at the time, I wouldn't have even had the capital to knock deals like that over. So these were perfect for me.
Yeah.
Good, cheap, solid, high yielding, strong growth location, nice. Bread and butters. It was perfect for what I
nice. Should have done. And when you're looking back at your first three, we've done quite a different bunch of properties. In three properties, you've done a lot.
Heaps different. Yeah, yeah.
Unit, land, build, and now cash flow fibro.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a little shack. Cool. Yeah, 100%.
So at 150. And interstate, your first property interstate.
Yep.
So you didn't have to do any work to this property.
No, this one I was lucky with. Everything it was pretty well ready to go. It was a good little deal.
Okay. So that would have given you a lot of confidence, right?
Yeah.
And also this highlights to me the what you need to buy. Yep. Your strategy was quite clear.
Yeah.
So that platform now, we're freeing up our serviceability. Mm-hmm. What property did you need to buy next?
So I was still very bullish on that market. And I've always been a big believer, if you learn a market intimately and you put the research and the time and effort into it, double down and do it again. You know, double down and back yourself that area is worth investing in again. So that's essentially what I did in that area. I kept hunting, I kept looking, and I picked up a very similar deal, but instead of being fibro, it was brick. Corner block. It was about 700 squares. Well, good little bread and butter. Same sort of thing. Paid a little bit more for it. But the funny thing on this one, and this is where like I find it funny, people have such a stigma towards things like fiber and whatnot. And like I'm someone like over the long term would always prefer brick in my portfolio as well. But you look at the two properties on paper and you think all day long you'd have heaps less maintenance involved with the brick one. That brick one has been a real bastard in my portfolio. Like I'm looking forward to Adelaide peeking out and shifting that deal. And yet the little Fibro shack, mate, I barely hear boo from it. Wow. High yield, you know, all the rest of it.
Is that in 2015 as well?
Same year. Yeah, it was within like a month. Like wow. I literally bought it, flew down for the pre-settlement and was hunting for that next one.
And what price point do we buy that for?
So I bought that one for 177.5.
Okay, so, under market?
Yeah, yeah. So I reckon that deal, this was probably one, if there's one property I'd say, and I guess I've probably never really said this, if there's one property I think I probably rushed a little and wasn't as good as others, it was that one. The market had quickened massively, literally in that like, it was like a 6-week gap from the last time they'd been down. And a lot of people were cashing out of Sydney and cashing out of Melbourne. And because Sydney and Melbourne had done nothing for 10 years. Mm. And then from 2013 to 2015, which is where we were, market had done about 50%. So there's a lot of people that had nothing for 10 years, had this nice little run of growth, cashed out, and then went over to buy these cheap, you know, they'll toweling up Adelaide, getting these cheap little deals with higher yields. So when I went down the time before, you know, I went down twice and probably saw 50 properties in you know, a number of days each time. And there was so much stuff for me to negotiate on and absolutely hammer. And then when I went back down the next time, I went for 4 days and there was like no stock. It was nuts. It was nothing. The market had just been like decimated. People just came through and just literally bought up almost everything. So I knew the market was turning, right? I was savvy enough to know that the market was turning and I'd probably missed the absolute bottom compared to when I'd bought last time, which was right at that bottom mark. But it was still there and it had only gone up a tad and realistically it was still, I was looking at it, corner block, developable, like subdividable, brick home, slightly better suburb. So I paid 177.5 for that one. And that one was probably worth, you know, in my mind, probably around about the 200 grand mark. So it's still good. There's still circa 10% in it, but not like huge chunky one. That one was like kind of over 15%. That was a huge hit on that one.
Mm. Okay. And we took that up to 90% as well.
Yeah, that was 90.
So it's a common theme here at the start when people are building out their portfolio. Some people are quite conservative and thinking, well, maybe it's just their conditioning from their family or their parents or something. 80%, I only want to pay 80%. So I want to start paying down the debt.
Yep.
Now, obviously, if you're looking to build out your portfolio and you're looking to accumulate, paying down your debt straight away isn't going to help you.
No.
So explain that to people about really trying to accelerate.
So the accumulation phase, as long as you can afford it, you should really be looking to try and leverage yourself as hard as you can. That's my honest opinion of it. Because if you want to build a decent portfolio, like we said in previous episodes, you can't do it with one or two properties. You need to leverage as hard as you are comfortable to do and build. You know, and build in there multiple properties. The sooner you can accumulate them, the sooner you've got them in your portfolio ticking over doing their thing. The longer you take to accumulate them, the longer, you know, the more chance that you're giving for that property to outpace you. I remember I've seen it, I saw it happen heaps with mates in Sydney trying to save for a 20% deposit, 2013, 2014, 2015, they missed the market. Because they tried to save for a 20% deposit and then they end up buying the same property 2 years later for 200 grand more with the 10% deposit. Because it went way too far past them. They couldn't match it.
Because they didn't want to pay
Lenders Morgan.
Yeah. Lenders Mortgage Insurance.
Yeah. Mate, you've got to embrace it. When you're starting out, unless you're some baller or you've got a shitload of equity in your primary residence or something like that, or you get an inheritance, whatever reason, you've got a heap of money there to play with. If you don't have a heap of money to play with, but even if you had, you know, like when you came to me, and we'll dive into this in another body, but you had 300 grand, right? Circa 300 grand or whatever we had to work with. But the deals that we were chasing had a bit of capital intensity to them. So we had to, even with those, we ran those at 88% lens to stretch that capital as far as we could. Doing that, we caught the market before it went crazy. Right. If we'd done 80, you probably only would have got two. You got four in before the market boomed and all four of those properties doubled in about a 2-year window.
And we are looking to let the market do the heavy lifting for us. Yes. So anytime we're out of the market,
yep.
You're not getting exposed to that
growth. 100%. 100%. When you get further along, it's all good to start dropping your OERs.
Yeah.
Like when I started getting to like 7, 8, 9 and beyond that, I never went back to 90% after that, right? That was when I'd had enough equity growth in my portfolio. I could play at that different level, but you've got to earn the right to play that different level. You've either got it from something else, got it from the prime reserve, whatever reason you've got it to play in that space, but you need to build it first. You need to essentially earn the right.
I think that'll be a good podcast in itself around that debt.
Yep.
Because I think just the general consensus around debt is just not understanding the good debt versus bad debt and really how to leverage on that debt.
Yep.
What do you reckon?
Yeah.
Down the track.
Yeah,
100%. I think people might find it quite helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. Okay.
It's good, man.
So I can see these are two cracking deals. I mean, for what deposit you're putting in compared to the valuation of the properties. Yeah,
yeah. They're doing all right.
You're doing well. All right. But the one thing that I have noticed, just looking at the timeline, so 2009 took us 3 years to get from 1 to 2.
Yep.
Then it's taken us two years by the time you bought the land and built. And now we've gone 2 straight away. So the time frame is compressed. And you know people don't like to be patient, right?
Yeah.
But it took you 3 years or 5 years to finish the build, right? For between 1 and 2.
Yep, yep.
And now we've gone bang.
Yeah.
On the back of the performance of that. So for anyone's listening, that is a massive gem there in itself about being patient.
Mm. It's a funny thing too because I love buy and builds and I've done multiples of them in my portfolio and done very, very well out of them, but they take you out of the market for a long time.
Mm.
What I learned was, and I did very well out of that deal and I'm happy I did it because I learned a lot from it as well. But you've got to look at like the opportunity cost of could I have bought 2 other properties potentially and tried to make 10% on the way into them and roll. You know, could I have worked it a bit harder and pushed it a bit harder and accumulated more in Sydney before Sydney went on its big run? And it's a debatable topic, you know, around that. But it's one of those things that I realized is at the other times where I also did buy and builds, it tapped me out of the market for like 12 months, sometimes longer. Mm. And it's one of those things you really got to weigh up. You can make good money on them. But you have to weigh it up against the opportunity cost of other deals and other strategies. And that's why like, and further in to obviously what we're doing here, we're going to dive into the Trident formula, right? Which is what I run through, your manufactured cash flow deals, your bread and butters for growth, and then your development deals. And so often now I've realized that your development deals, they come in at the back end. They're chunk deals, you know, either to keep funding new projects like potentially cash flow deals and whatnot as well, or they're chunk deals to reduce debt and pay off and formulate part of your exit strategy.
Yep.
But during that accumulation phase, they can really take a big chunk of time out of the equation.
Yep. Yep. So we've got the 2 properties in Adelaide, number 3 and 4. Just out of curiosity, those 2 deals, what do you think they would be, what are they valued at roughly now?
Now?
Yeah. Each of those deals.
The second one, the bigger brick corner block one, that'd be in the high 3s.
Okay.
It would have done, it's just done over 100%. Great. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's more than doubled. And the little fibro shack, she'd be 330 to 350. So again, more than doubled. And mate,
awesome.
Honestly, nothing on that one. That one's been a gem.
And the property 4, the brick one, that was, you still maintain that 7% yield?
So that one, when I bought that one, that was sitting at about 7.8. So that was at a quite strong yield. Now that now, and that was at like 270 a week rent or whatever it was all the way back then. No, I think that's up at like 370, 380 or something now. So it's up like heaps higher than what it was.
So we've satisfied our serviceability issue so far.
Yep.
Did we have much more lending available to go again?
When we reassessed after that, yes, it wasn't too bad. We still had a bit and there was still a little bit of capital left over from the previous ones as well.
All right. So we're in 2015. Did we snag another one in there or you just?
No, we did not.
No, that was good enough to
oh, thanks,
to
mate.
Do too. Well
the,
done.
I got the Jimmy tick of approval. Thanks for that, mate. I'm satisfied with my portfolio to date.
Well done, Sammy. Well
thank
done.
You. Thank you.
So property 5 then.
Yes.
Couldn't do it in 2015. Won't hold that against you. But 2016, thanks, where did you turn your attention to?
So 2016, I moved on from Adelaide. Adelaide had a nice little spurt. I turned my sights back to Brizzy. Brizzy was one of those markets that everyone talked about for ages. It seemed like the last time it boomed in like 2007, 2008, people just kept talking about it for ages, even though the market just kept sliding. But as a young investor, not as, I guess, educated as I am now, I was still swayed to look back into that market. But I knew I had to find somewhere that had better yields than what I'd found the last time. And I had to find markets that I was happier with than what I was the first time when I went looking because it was just gave me a bad vibe where the other areas I'd been looking supposedly had the yields, you know, that I was chasing.
Okay. So what were we looking for? What kind of property were we actually looking for specifically?
So I had sub 250K per deal. I wanted to spend a little, you can't really buy anything. You couldn't buy anything that was a house for under 200 grand. So I had to, you know, raise that bar a little bit. That also made me raise my LVR. So these were the only two properties I ever bought at a 95% LVR, which you could do back in the day. But mate, you got towed. I didn't realize the difference back then, but I was getting towed on the old LMI.
Yeah.
But it allowed me to get into two, you know, really good deals that I went into.
So in order to buy that number five, yep, where were we pulling equity from?
So I had a little bit left over from the Highlands build.
Yep.
And I went back in and tapped property number three, the little Fibro Shack.
Okay.
I'd got a val on that. I think I'd be able to pull out about 20 grand or something like that out of it as well and put that to work.
Yeah. So for everyone listening, you can see how you're really tapping into multiple properties to try and create that momentum.
Yes.
And having the right broker in your corner is going to be really important for that.
Definitely.
In terms of structuring it as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, were all of these bought in your own name as well?
Yeah, to that point they were. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So 250.
Yep.
A 250.
Mm-hmm.
And
that doesn't get you far in Brizzy, mate. Let me tell you that much. So in some pretty dodgy little spots there, put it that way.
And so your research around that, when you're looking at Brisbane, where did you narrow your focus?
Man, it's literally grunt work, eh? It's grunt work, like trying to find the right spots that fit the brief and then getting on the ground and speaking to people and getting different recommendations. Oh, have you looked here? Have you looked there? Yeah, again, people always trying to turn you back into units because they're shit quality stock that agents just try and flog because they're very, very hard quality stock to sell, right? I ended up out in Ipswich. Now, originally when I was looking the first time around in 2015, I was looking in Logan and I was looking in a part of Ipswich, like Redbank Plains and stuff, right? And I just couldn't find the right assets in there that fit the brief. I also wasn't sold on the area. There was a huge amount of supply in both those markets. And mate, there was just, every time you went through, it was just like, you just had that stigma when you went through and different areas. And they've cleaned up a fair bit since then. A lot of owner occupiers have bought in the last few years and have definitely cleaned it up. But it wasn't the nicest place to be at that time. And I also, like even with that on top, I really struggled to get in on budget without being in a little ghetto. So mate, I ended up pushing the search that little bit further out and I ended up out in Ipswich itself. So the first deal I picked up was actually out in a little suburb called Churchill, which is out over near the RAAF base. It's actually the University of Queensland, Southeast Queensland, whatever it is. They've got the campus out there at Churchill as well. And I picked up a beautiful little, it was actually it wasn't beautiful. I'll take that back. I picked up a nice little, it was a four bed, one bath, double brick home. It wasn't Housing Commission. It was a privately funded Aboriginal Housing Department. You know, these people that were trying to give back.
Yeah.
And they had about 50 of these homes, and they'd get trashed after a bit, and then after they got trashed, they'd kind of slowly do a little bit of work to them and flog them off. I knew I had 250 to spend, and these guys, when they took it to market, at like 300 or office over 295 or something huge. And I saw it there when I first went up my first couple of times, and I spoke to them about it, and they go, no, they're chasing like 300 plus. It's like, no, like way out of the league of what I was looking at. And then I noticed that they're still like months later, and I think it dropped to like office over 275 or something. So I was like, okay, a bit of movement there. And I did my old, you know, phone call. I was like, look, this is what I'm willing to pay. And I think I offered something in the very high ones, like it was very low. And I was just like, look, I don't have much money and I need to pick something up here. You know, like it's, you know, I'm willing to buy. I got my finance approval, all the rest of it. And she's just like, mate, you're nowhere near, like you're kidding yourself. And I go, look, it's an offer. Please take it to them, see what they say. I think they counted somewhere around about the 240, 250 marks. I'm like, so I had them down a fair bit straight off the bat.
Wow.
Yeah.
But even having the guts to actually go in at 190,
mate,
feel really awkward about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Man,
you just got to throw it out there. Like, it's like, one of those things you got to get out. And the thing is as well, you cop abuse. Like, there's no getting around the fact that, like, you will cop abuse. Agents will swear. Agents will hang up on you. You'll cop shit for doing it. But it's like, it's what you got to do. If you've got a certain budget, you got to stick in and a market you really want to tap and whatnot. Like, you've got to do what you got to do to try and get those deals.
And I think it's important to distinguish that you're not trying to do the wrong, you're not trying to rip people off or anything. Someone's looking to sell. You're looking to buy the best possible price.
Yep.
So you're basically just fishing them out for a counter, right?
Yep.
think that's what you mentioned.
Yeah, definitely.
So that was it.
Got my counter. Counters were pretty good compared to list price. I raced the 200. Raced 200 and they dropped, I think it was they dropped to about 230 at the time. And they were kind of sitting there. They're like, 230. And the agent told me, look, I think I can close it at 225 for you. But that's going to be the best. Like they've told me, I don't want to see anything else. Like, you know, this is what she was saying to me. If it's not a 225 on paper, don't even worry about calling us again about it. I was like, all right, no worries. And I just left it. I was working on heaps of other stuff at the time. And I thought, you know, whatever, we'll see how we go. And
this is listed for 300 initially.
offers over 295 and then offers over 275. Yep. And there was offers over 275 at the time. And then she called me up about it was maybe like a week or so later or something. And she goes, come on, like, just put something else on paper, lift it up for me. Let me try and work it for him. Cause she'd been hanging on to this listing for ages. Yep. She was actually just about to get out of the game. She was about to move back into property management. So she was like, she pretty much just said to me, look, I just want to close this thing out before we, you know, I've been working on this thing for like 6 months. Help me out. So I was like, all right, no worries. So I raised by $5,000, went to 205, got him down on paper, 225. I went up to 210 and I said, I'm done at 210. Like, that's it. And I sat there again and waited a week and then they came back and they countersided at 215. And they just said, like, it was literally just like a dead set, mate.
Do not call us.
Mate, like.
You squeezed us enough. Come on, give us a break. Yeah.
So I countersigned at the 215 and got it done at the 215.
Okay. So you didn't get it under 215.
I towed them up on the building and pest.
Did you?
For like, no. Nothing. Yeah, yeah. So like the building and pest, there was like a couple of broken. Probably shouldn't be saying this. I hope no real estate agents listen to this. But I towed a little bit on the building and pest. There was this old iron tile sheets. It was weird. They went horizontally. It was like an iron tiled sheet. You never see them. There's a few of them were broken. They were like, we can't fix it. Like it's no one does it anymore. It's from like the 90s or 80s or something. Like no one does it anymore. And so I got a quote for how much it was to replace it. And it came in, it was like, I don't know, $6,500. And they said, look, most will give you off is $3,000. So I got $3,000 off. And then when I went up to renovate it the next month, I just siliconed the shit out of it. And it was fine. I've never had a touch of since. So for a tube of silicon, I got away with that one. So it was good.
So you actually did get a steal.
Yes, I did.
Well done. You got it. Okay. So
that was a worm-worthy deal.
That is. Every deal that you've just run through, even from the first couple, getting in on a good price has been the cornerstone of your whole approach.
It's paramount. Like making a margin on the way in, buying below market is key if you want to build like a scalable, a big portfolio and reasonably quickly.
And so that is knowing your market, knowing what prices are going for, not having fear of asking the questions about negotiating hard and just being prepared to cop abuse if it means you're going to get a really good deal. Mm-hmm. But also, you're still fostering the relationship too.
100%.
Because otherwise, she wouldn't have wanted to do something with you if you didn't. Yeah. So you're not trying to be an asshole.
About it. Yeah, exactly.
You're not trying to be, because then out of principle, she would have said, no, I don't want to do any business with you.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. The real kicker on these deals, right, was like it was over 700 square meter block, like good little spot, double brick home. It needed a bit of work. Yep. So I went up there and did a renovation on it. But man, it had a almost brand new Caesar stone kitchen. I have no idea why they put it in there. It made no sense. Yeah, it was covered in dust. Like it hadn't been touched in two years. It was like they were going to revamp it, finished it, did the kitchen and were like, whatever, just let it go. And they didn't touch it. And so I went in there. It was literally brand new Caesar stone, high gloss, all new appliances. Like it was crazy.
So at that stage, you were doing some of the renos yourself. You go up.
All renos.
Do them all yourself. All
my renos, yeah. So the second property, I forgot to say, number four, second property in Adelaide, I went down for a week and renovated that one. Yep. I was just floors, paint, window furnishings, all that sort of stuff. Same with this one. I went up. It was double brick, which meant internal brick walls.
Yep.
They are a nightmare to try and paint because you've got all bits in between
grout lines,
bricks. Yeah, but like sunken, so it wasn't flush.
Oh god!
Oh yeah, mate, it was a nightmare.
Roll that out.
the brush in. Yeah, the brush. I went and got a spray gun.
Oh, did you? Oh, good.
So yeah, I went through all that, but the ceiling had been sagging in a couple of the rooms, so I pinned them back up. Like a lot of different jobs on it. I did a lot of stuff in the bathroom as well. Replaced vanities, retiled the floor and stuff like that. So I think all up, including like I put a ducted reverse cycle in there that was probably like $2,500. I think it was about $6,500 full turnaround reno. in I think it took me a week. It was about a week. I used to leave. If I do a reno, I would finish up work as early as I could on a Friday, and then I'd jet off on the Friday arvo and just try and punch out the whole trip in one go.
Yeah, wow.
And then normally, I don't know, like stop in Ballina or something, you know, $100 a night, motel or something, and then finish the trip.
Were you working in the with your folks at this stage still?
Yeah, yeah.
The whole time. So all these properties still working at the farm?
Yeah, yeah.
On a low income?
Yes. I never worked another job, like a full-time job. I always worked the farm because the thing that allowed me to keep borrowing money, a lot of people kind of ask this, you know, they jump around jobs, they're always chasing top dollar. But like what banks love to see is security of a position that you stay in for a long time.
Mm.
And it really helped me with kind of what I was doing at the time as well in that accumulation phase.
Okay. So that is property 5.
Yeah.
Which –
yep.
The yield on that, what did we end up getting?
Mate, I think that one rented for $300 or $310 a week or something from memory. So it was just over the 7%.
Yep.
But it was big enough block for a granny flat. That actually is granny flatted now as well. So there's
You
know, that thing I think combined is pulling about $650 a week now.
Yeah, wow.
For all in.
But you didn't do that straight away, the granny
flat. No,
I
did.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple of years
so
ago now.
Just to wrapping up that number 6, do we have time for number 6, Tommy? What time? How long are we?
I'll punch you. The next one's quick and easy.
All right. Nice and easy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's a bit of a teaser after 6. Wee. That's when the wheels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me punch 6 real quick.
Yeah.
6 is easy. It was very similar to 4. I was literally up there renovating. And while I was up there renovating, I'd get up at 5 a.m. and I'd punch out work till about 7 p.m. So I was kind of doing, you know, circa your kind of 14, 15 hour days. I literally would at first, I stayed at a hotel for the first couple of nights until I got the bathroom up and running and killed a couple of cane toads that were in my front bloody tap thing. I was freaking out because I'd never seen a cane toad, being New South Welshman. And then I slept in a little tent out the back of the place to save myself a bit of cost, sleeping in the tent out the back and doing that. But what I was doing was at night, I'd sit there on realestate.com and try and see things coming up or fresh listings or whatever. And I noticed this listing. This is while I was renovating. I noticed this listing that had been there when I was up ages ago, almost the same thing as this one. It sat there, and a second agent had listed it that I had actually become mates with. He was a bit of a champion out there, like a good bloke, but he always pushed for like top dollar, or like good money. Like he wasn't normally one to muck around. And I called him and I go, mate, what's the go with this one? I know that other guy's got it, and he's telling me real low figures, and he goes, mate, bring me an offer, and I'll do everything I can to close it, and we will just, you know, back and forth, hammer and tong. And I literally went and looked at it one afternoon from the reno, shot over there because it was Silkstone. So it was like 2 suburbs over from church. It was literally less than 10-minute drive for me. Went through it with him. Was in decent nick. Again, threw in a stupidly cheap offer. But he just towed him up because he knew this other agent, his out-of-area agent, had wasted his time for something like 6 months.
Yeah, wow.
Not selling this thing at what he said he was going to sell it at. Again, listed for over $300. Ended up coming to a final sale price on this one as well after a lot of backwards and forwards and bullshit. Literally texts and calls. I'm on the tools and everything on this thing. And before I left on the Saturday arvo to drive back home, he calls me and he goes, mate, I got it wrapped up at 212.
Oh.
So I had 2 deals done at 212 within about a month of each other in 10 minutes. It was weird, man, to get it at
for 2 properties that were listed at over 300.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Cracker.
Mate.
It was, much work to do on that one?
That one was fine. I needed to do a bit of work a little bit down the track,
yep.
But it was at first it was fine. First couple of years it was fine, and then I went up and did a bit of just a cosmetic facelift on it a couple of years later.
And similar rental,
yeah, a tad less. So the 4B1 was pulling about 310, okay. I think, and that one was pulling about 295, 300 something.
And so these properties you bought quite discounted. Was there a decent amount of equity by the time you settled? And
the 4x1 post reno, I reckon if they took that back to market, I reckon I could have got high 2s for it.
Yep.
I had it revalued the following year at 300.
Yeah.
The little one at 212, I also believe that was a steal. Would have picked that for, but that was probably worth 250-ish, something like that as well. But it had gone stale with the other guy over listing it, and again, stigma, smell about it. No one wanted to touch it.
So it seems like the momentum is really starting to build. We did 2 and 215,
yep.
2 in early 216,
yep.
It seems like.
Yeah, yeah.
We're starting to build chunks of equity.
Yes.
Serviceability is still pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? We've still got excess.
Strong yields kept me going.
Yep. We've still got equity to play with.
Yep.
This is where I think, just planting the seeds for everyone, the next podcast, what happened from here? Because I think there's a real juicy story from seven onwards.
Yeah.
Hold yourself, hold your hats, everyone.
Look, it was, and again, this is what we'll cover in the next one, but there was a lot of things that eventuated over the following 12 months after that deal. A lot of things, both personally, professionally, with the properties. It was a pretty hectic 12 months that kind of eventuated from, you know, in that time frame. Definitely, we're getting the wave that I can't go into it now because it's too late in the show because it's going to take a bit of time to get through. But there's a lot of stuff within that to kind of, I guess, unpack. And it was a tough time. Like, it was a lot of shit that went down during that time. But what I gained out of the back of it has really defined who I am, both, you know, as director of APS, you know, and what I, my mission, you know, to try and help people as well in that space, as an investor, even as a person as well. Like, yeah, some of the shit that went through in that following year, which obviously we'll unpack on the next step. Yeah, man, it was a hectic year. Eh? There's so much went on. So
if you think it's smooth sailing for the first six, make sure you tune in. I'm looking forward. Was it just the first deal after that, or just the series of that next year?
It was that. Yeah, it was that kind of 12 to 18 month window of just a lot happened in that window that needs some unpacking.
Is this like a to be continued? You know, when you watch those shows and they sort of put that, and you're like, oh, come on, just getting into it.
I think so, mate. I think it's a little to be continued. On the next one.
Yeah. But, well, Sammy, the first six, I mean, I know we just quickly went through the four and we have gone over time a little bit, but they were awesome. Guys.
Thank you, mate.
I love the fact that I didn't realize how much, because I've never heard these stories before.
Yeah, yeah.
But how well you negotiated on the way in.
Mm. Thank you, mate.
So if anyone's listening out there thinking, you know what? I'm going to do this on my own. They should re-listen to these, the first two, over and over again, because there were some clear gems there about how to negotiate. Obviously, the market's different, but still the same principles apply, right?
100%. Yeah, yeah. No, mate. Look, I appreciate the feedback on it, mate. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I hope people did as well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, take it away. Yeah. So we better wrap it up.
Mate, thank you as always for joining me. Tommy, mate, running the show as always, mate. Appreciate it.
He's given about five wind-ups. I'm not sure.
I don't know if he's I think like the things are being thrown at. There's a bit of dodging going on. I'm doing a bit of dodgeball. He's got a bit of a gimpy hand going on. I don't know what's going on here, but it's all happening. But guys, thank you very much as always for joining us again
on another Scouting Australia podcast.
Powered by Australian Property Scout with the host, co-host joining me as usual, Mr. Jimmy Ibrahim. Guys, if you want to get any more information on APS as a buyer's agency and what we may be able to help you do within your own portfolio, please reach out on the socials at Australian Property Scout or reach out direct to book in a strategy session, www.australianpropertyscout.com.au. Any questions, as always, same thing, flick them through, guys. We want to hear. Q&As are going to be coming up soon with all the different questions. I know we've got a lot coming through. So, yeah, reach out with any and all questions that you want to know, and we'll be back soon to run through it all. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Sammy.